Straight Jack, episode 15. Every other week, every fortnight, we review three films. One new release, one post-2000 film, and one pre-2000 film, all of which are joined by a theme. The theme is set by whatever the new release is. This week was Robbie's choice. Film was...
Hello, High Water.
Theme was...
Heist movies?
Rating was...
Ooh, we'll get to that. So, Hello, High Water, directed by David McKenzie, who also directed Startup, and written by Taylor Sheridan.
Yes.
Sicario writer, yeah.
Sicario writer, starring Chris Pine and Ben Foster, who play this sort of good, bad, juxtaposed brother friendship who travel through the Midwest robbing banks in order to raise some money to pay off their dead mother's mortgage, farm mortgage.
Yeah. It had been foreclosed, and they, paying off pretty... The whole idea was paying off the... interest, wasn't it, on the tax, those scumbags.
So. Lots of heists, lots of robbing, lots of guns. Hello, High Water. James, what did you think?
No, don't do me.
Why not?
Because I think I'm going to be the only one that's singing its praises, and I feel there should be some hating first.
There's no hating in this room. I'll happily start and say I like this film. I was entertained by it from the get-go. I mean, it had that sort of drive sort of opening where, okay, you can hear the throttle, we've got all these scatty camera angles, you're in. This is who these characters are, this is what they're doing, and you're straight off. But I think as it sort of goes on, you start to realise it is a little bit dead behind the eyes. And for me, it just seemed all very showy, and it looked right and it sounded right, but it just didn't have enough behind it. It was just a really good skeleton for me. What did you think about the start, Robbie?
I thought the start was pretty interesting. It grips you, doesn't it?
Gripping is the word.
It's a good way to start a heist film with a heist,
yes.
I think. Draws you in from the off, and you get to know the characters later. For some reason, I find, and I guess we might touch on this as we go, with heist films, you, for some reason, or at least I do, always side with the heisters to begin with. Despite them being the bad guys, aren't they?
They're entertaining you. They're giving you a show. You want to see something, don't you? And that's the only other thing that's just dawned on me is that the first ones always seem to go very well. They're very good. They're very good at the start, aren't they? But in all of these films we'll discuss, apart from one, they do generally, if there are numerous heists in them, they do always seem to go well, don't they?
Yeah. But yeah, I just think it's quite interesting that we always side with the heisters. Is it a heister? Is that what we call it? The robbers?
Heister.
I don't know if they have a term.
Technical term. But then it's retaining that, because that does seem to be a theme in all the films we'll discuss. It's how much along the journey they're still able to sort of to retain the liking of them. And did you fall out of love?
Yeah, I mean, I fell out of love as soon as they opened their mouths.
Here we go.
No, I mean, yeah, okay, fine, I'm cynical, but it was, in my opinion, one of the worst films I've seen. I can't even look at James
ever
in the eye.
Because that's just such a ludicrous statement
year,
to say that.
This year.
Now you know how I feel. Midnight Special.
It was...
Now you know how I feel, mate. Silver Linings Playbook.
I feel like we should do some positives before we go into my mass amount of negatives.
Nice start.
Yeah, go on, please.
Well, the first thing I will say, in terms of... we touched upon it on previous podcasts, this idea of managing expectation. And I think for me, the film looked awful. The title was awful. And the film looked awful when I saw the trailer. So I thought, oh, that's a dud. And then you heard little murmurings of reviews coming out. And you're thinking, oh, hold on, actually, it's one of those films that sort of the Trojan horse of a film, the opposite of a Trojan horse, really, where it actually looks terrible from the outside, but it's actually all good on the inside. And I was pleasantly surprised by this film. I think maybe because I still had quite low expectations, but I love this film. I thought...
Love?
Yeah, I know.
It's nice to hear.
Yeah, because I think it's got that, that theme of sort of capitalism in the background and, the rich not quite stealing from the poor, but certainly preying upon the vulnerable, which is obviously in this circumstance, their mum, and then subsequently the two kids, really, and the whole family tree.
Those scenes are really interesting when they speak to, I think, a bank manager and speak to the locals and the local waitress, and they do bring up those themes, and they're sort of like, this guy's like, oh, this is amazing, you're stealing the bank's money who have stolen from your family for... And that was really sort of poignant,
and
wasn't
that it? Was going to be my first point. So that Herc from Friday Night Lights, he has that tiny little cameo where he's the bank manager and he's saying, actually, he should be a completely like rational individual who should be, you know, offering completely impartial advice, whereas actually he's really quite obviously showing his emotion and his favourability, I suppose, towards them. But for me, I fully sympathise with them throughout the whole way. I think for me, in these kind of films, there is sort of the anti-hero element to all of these type of films where you're supposed to like them, but you can't quite get away from the very act that they are doing, which is a criminal act of robbing someone. So yes, you do all the like, and we'll talk about some of the other films, you try and put all the likeable tropes against them, but actually they're still robbing and they're doing it for the wrong reasons, usually, which is just pure greed. So you can't quite fall in love with them. You can't quite empathise and enjoy what they're doing. Whereas this, I did like their justification behind it.
Could they not have gone and got good jobs? Could they not have? Because how long?
How would that have got back at the banks though?
But why did?
But years ago.
I don't know.
I'm playing complete devil's advocate.
No, and rightly so. But I think for me, between those two, and we'll come off to Jeff Bridges shortly, I'm sure. But for me, the performances in general were great. I think Ben Foster was good. He sort of plays that sort of black sheep, you know, sort of that.
He's clearly the sort of more the scatty, the more erratic of the two, and Pine's the more reserved, the level head.
Yeah.
And he seems to be the one whereas he's the one actually driving it for the end, the means to an end. Foster is a little bit like, but also let's just go out there and shoot some guns and steal some money. And he's maybe not in it for the right reasons, is why I would say I do disagree with you. I don't believe that they're necessarily doing it for the right reasons, and as it progresses I find them incredibly sort of unlikable.
I think Ben Foster's character, certainly he's doing it for the fun of it, really. He's doing it for the game of actually doing it. There's one particular scene where Chris Pine is still in a restaurant having his dinner, and Ben Foster in the space of about 5 minutes basically goes and robs another bank, and in that one scene I suppose you really see the difference, and you use the word, you know, the juxtaposition between those two characters and how different they are. And yeah, I quite like the camaraderie between them. I like the brotherhood between them. That did make me sympathise with them.
I thought it was so satisfactory. Neither of their performances stood out for me. When I watched The Nice
Chris
Guys...
Chris Pine, I thought...
The Nice Guys jumped up for me, sorry, as
really?
Well.
I just thought, you know what, I don't really like Russell Crowe, but I thought both of their performances played the roles much better than these two did.
That gelled. This for me, these two did not gel,
and they were supposed to be brothers, which kind of meant they had more to work with in my eyes.
Just, but they're quite different brothers. I don't think they're supposed to be best mate brothers.
No,
if you
but
know what
then
I mean.
You know, when they do have that kind of we're brothers moment, mm-hmm. and that supposedly meaningful scene where it's kind of like this is what brotherhood's all about. It was so painful.
It's
to
striking
watch.
How vapid it is. I just felt nothing. There's nothing that I enjoyed. I did get some laughs, particularly from Foster's character. But then I think at the end when I was going, why do I feel so empty when something has looked quite impressive? And I think maybe it is because it was all just a joke. Jeff Bridges and his partner, great chemistry.
Same here. Absolutely.
And I think I wanted which I think I was led to believe this was going to be a sort of a Southern Gothic or a Western noir kind of in the vein. No Country for Old Men was certainly banded around, and you can't obviously blame the film for what came of it. But almost I felt like it was all a bit too much of a joke. And by the time it got to Jeff Bridges doing these semi-impressive monologues, it was just sort of like, I don't really care. It all seems like a bit of a joke. The main thing I would say about this film is I didn't feel there was ever any threat. I didn't feel it was ever out of their hands, and I felt it played out quite predictably, and did spoil it for me.
Even when there was threat for me, it was sort of self-inflicted, and of course it's always going to be self-inflicted with a heist. You know, you don't have to be robbing banks, but in terms of towards the end,
it just seemed very rash. It just went, oh, I'm going to go. And I can, to an extent, buy it. And we've seen characters lose their minds and go, you know what, I'm just going to go out there, blades of glory to an extent. But it just didn't... I was like, oh, but are you sure you're not going to... Oh, okay, don't even try. It's fine, just go.
That's one thing, though. I think for a heist film, that I agree with you, for a heist film, the heists aren't particularly good. I think that bit you just touched upon there, for me, it always reminds me of towards the end of Ryan Gosling's show, his cameo in Place Beyond the Pines, when he's a very good bank robber. He's a very good, you know, heisty or whatever we're calling him. And then he's quite opportunistic. He comes to his, you know, this eventual place, and he's clearly very sort of ill-prepared, and he hasn't got everything he needs to, but he still goes ahead with it anyway, which obviously ends in, you know, culminates in getting, you know, a bit of a sticky wicket. But I think that is one of the problems with this film. I think emotionally, I agree. I felt the camaraderie between them. I felt the chemistry between them, but I didn't necessarily feel the emotion between them, and I agree with that. And then also, I think the heists aren't particularly good, and we'll come on to some of the other films as well when we talk about the quality of heists, or maybe some of the other, you know, really impressive films when you think about Heat and you think about...
Even Inside Place Beyond the Pines Straight was, time. You've got to feel that every second counts, that the tension is there. That was completely missing from this, whereas I would say the other two films had that to a far higher degree for me.
But
personally,
I think for me, it's because I was questioning them the whole way through. I felt like their judgment was so poor. But
they're not experts in this.
No, but okay, let's ignore the fact that the heists weren't very good. But in terms of the fact that they're robbing banks initially, you guys have touched on, but when they do pull up to the bank, which is way too big for them to sort of get away with heisting, neither of them go, you know what, we don't need to rob this Texas chain. We don't need to. We're already getting our payback by getting the farm. That's all we need. That's all we need out of this.
But it'll make a better movie if they bite off more than they can chew.
Yeah, why didn't they just turn around and go, let's just go for a couple smaller banks?
Yeah.
They're past the point of no return at that stage. From a mental perspective, they've gone in and they go, right, we're going to do this. Then they convince themselves, right, we're going to be able to do this. Then they get there, it's a bit too big. They're not going to go, oh, actually, you know what? No,
but they
not
do.
Going to.
And Chris Pine does go, Jesus.
Yeah, because
Jesus,
exactly,
Ben Foster.
Because
what
he's the
done?
Voice of reason, isn't he? He's the one who's almost being able to look at this externally focused. He can sort of take it out and look at the bigger picture and say, you know what, should we do this? What are the implications of it? And he's sort of, I suppose, he's the mastermind behind it in a way. And for me, the thing that I really liked about it is that, and again, I appreciate I'm going to, excuse the pun, going to be shot down about this, but I think for me, it feels smart. It felt authentic. It didn't try and dramatize it. It felt like it was very controlled. It built up suspense, particularly towards the end. And for me, it felt rewardingly slow. It wasn't, we've already touched on those heists. There aren't that many. It's not really a particularly action-packed film. There are a lot of set pieces in this film, which is, again, to use the word again, juxtapositioned against actually some real scenes of complete boredom with two people just sitting outside a restaurant or speaking to this steak lady who's, it's sort of these bits of comedy as well. But for me, there's lots of set pieces and it felt slow, but to the point where it was one of those ones where you were just captivated the whole time and enthralled. For me, clearly, you two both disagree.
I think you've described the exact opposite to how I feel about it.
And I will go straight in the middle. I really, it's Western film pacing. It's not typical heist movie pacing.
Right.
It is Jeff Bridges. You've got these guys. I mean, and all the cliches come out, of course. It's just, oh, he's a week, 2 weeks from retirement.
Yeah, that's,
but I love that. I loved him. It's so slow, him just sort of sitting, falling asleep outside the bank waiting. I'm with you in that I enjoyed the pacing and I like that it was sort of not pragmatic, but it built and it sort of went step by step and I was with it, but I didn't ever feel that feeling. It didn't ever release the emotion of being enthralled or genuinely excited or any suspense as a result of it. But yeah, obviously Jeff Bridges was pretty good, and the chemistry between him and his partner I found was far more legit and far more rewarding. And by the end, you sort of go, oh, actually, of the two pairs, that was certainly the dream combo.
Yeah.
The winning combo, anyway.
I don't disagree with that.
I'd say there were four scenes in this film which were supposed to, like, kind of draw emotion out of me. There was when they go into the mum's bedroom, when the Chris Pine's talking to his son, when the brothers sort of have their brotherly moment, and the final scene.
The final scene. Yeah.
And I was not one of them touched home for me.
But for me, it didn't. There's one of the films that we're going to talk about, which for me uses quite a lot of cliches, and I think in parts this does. But from a dialogue point of view, from what they talk to each other about, I didn't feel that it did try and go down all the usual tropes of using certain lines and really trying to pull on your heartstrings. It's just sort of refreshingly honest.
I
thought Chris Pine knocked this film out of the park. I've never rated him as an actor. I thought he plays this sort of quite understated. He's the sort of the controlled one, and for me, I thought he was brilliant.
It's Chris Fine. It wasn't. There was nothing more than that. There's no masterclass here, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
And I totally agree with you. Of those scenes, there was one particular at the end that's like, are you feeling that? Are you? And it still just sort of all fell a bit flat.
I thought they were really cliche.
I did enjoy all of those scenes, and I liked what they were going for, and it wasn't cliche, but it just didn't add enough.
I felt like they were trying too hard with those scenes. And with the little kid and his, sorry, Chris Pine's son, when he says, so do you want a beer? And his son goes, no, you just told me not to be like you.
Oh.
And then there's the kind of appreciative nod. I don't know. Just didn't sit well.
Love that scene.
Final thoughts?
4 for me.
Oh, I will go for a 3. I was, yeah, entertained.
I'll give it 1 star for the fake lady.
No, because that...
Hey, come, no, come on.
That goes beyond subjectivity, though. That's just ridiculous to call this a 1-star film.
Honestly,
I'm up nights thinking about Midnight Special. I'm at genuinely up nights.
Did he give it 1 star?
Yeah, Midnight Special is a 1-star film.
I'm genuinely...
But you can't say that.
I'm up nights.
I think we rate films differently, because a 2 you can't say is... It's just, it wasn't for me, but it was made well. 1 star is... by the end, I was seething. That's how I was from Midnight Special.
But 1 star is basically saying, I felt and thought this film was awful.
Who's next?
Put it into words.
Well, no, but you've read X-Men like that. You've read Idiocracy like that. How can you even pretend that Hell or High Water is in the same emotional or cinematic?
It is in the exact
it's
same
not
bracket.
Even close to that.
It is.
It's not.
For
that's,
me, it's,
that is ludicrous.
I
to say
thought
that.
At times I thought it was offensive to its audience and to the genre.
Then you are deluded. That is.
This is
ridiculous.
Great. This is fantastic.
That's just bizarre.
It's gonna hit him. Oh god. So onto the town. Oh, the flipping town. Okay, written and directed by Ben Affleck, is a film that starts with a heist. That is successful, but in order to get away, they have to abduct one of the tellers before releasing her safely back into the wild. This film then takes an interesting turn as Mr. Affleck decides to check that she hasn't sort of given away too much information to the police before swiftly falling in love with her. More heists ensue. Good smell there, Robbie. Pete Postlethwaite is this sort of mobster, sort of gangster boss who has sort of got a hold on them and keeps them doing these jobs. And he's basically got to juggle his personal life, his professional life, and his ambitions for the future. How did you guys like the town?
Yeah. Very good introduction.
Did you like it?
That was a very good introduction.
Oh, thank you.
The film or the introduction?
No, well, you can rate both at the end. But, 5.
I did. I think... I felt slightly differently. So the first time I watched it was upon release, when I really did enjoy this film.
2007?
Yeah,
or maybe 9?
I think it might be 9. But no, I did. I think I enjoyed it the first time I watched it. I think for me, the second time around, you begin to take a... You can take a step back and, I suppose, realise some of the things that's going on in this film. And for me, it's a story that has been done time and time again and will continue to be done over and over again.
It works.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tried and tested method and it always seems to work. But they sort of change... Well, they don't change it, but they try and doctor it slightly by infusing this whole idea of the Boston culture and this idea that...
And there are a lot of films now that do play on this.
Gone Baby Gone does that as well. You know, he really plays on... the culture, and they have quite a few scenes in that where Casey Affleck's just, he's one of them, isn't he? You know, he's part of the he's rooted in this particular sort of context, in this particular environment, and it does try and, you know, toe that line and successfully to an extent. I mean, you have the quotes at the start and you have the accents, and I mean, just like Tarantino ends up in culminating in the cinema in Glorious Bastards, massive Red Sox fan Ben Affleck culminates in Fenway Park. Classic.
How can I make a film where we go to Fenway Park and I have sex with crackhead Blake Lively? First two things written into the script, bookend it, actually.
Yeah.
I would just strongly agree. This is the first time I saw it, okay. And I must admit I absolutely lapped it up.
Oh, really?
Having seen Argo was the first one I saw, and I wasn't overly impressed. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was fine. It was amusing, but and then Gone Baby Gone, I was blown away by the sort of neo-noir sort of aspects, how dark and gritty that actually felt, and how it did feel like the real Boston that we are starting to see a lot more of. It does get compared to Heat a lot, and rightfully so, because a lot of it, as obviously we know, the template is all there, and it's not that film. And Heat is probably the best heist, if not the best action film ever made. And this isn't that, but I just found this thoroughly entertaining and just with an awful lot going for it. Before I go into that, what are your general thoughts, Robbie?
I hated it again. I felt like it really missold me. It was kind of...
What were you expecting?
I was expecting a heist film, and what I got was a romance film.
With heists
every now and again.
But isn't that what all... Like, because sort of Hell or High Water is this kind of... the kind of personal side and this kind of social commentary on the banks have taken all our money. It's that all.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe it just leaned too far onto the romance side for me then. I just
didn't like the smooching. But it's Rebecca Hall. It was so organic.
Blake,
he fell for her in the laundrette.
He's already got Blake Lively on the go, like you said,
but
though.
She's on the meth, look, and she's had kids and that.
I was talking about Judgment earlier with Hell or High Water. In what world do you think I've just held this girl hostage? Now I'm going to start dating her.
Well, that's the beauty of love, Robbie, because when he looked into her eyes in that laundrette, he just couldn't help himself. She is so nice.
Absolutely not.
She helps kids, and she doesn't get paid to do it.
No, I couldn't get on board.
You were all the cliches, and you just were just, I've seen this before, I'm not having this.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it wasn't so much the cliches, it was just, I just didn't believe it. But from what's it, 15 minutes in, when it all... The heist at the start is brilliant.
The heist and the shootouts, there's several of them, and they are really, really good. Mm. They really do draw you in, and... got three names written down here. Jeremy Renner, who did get nominated for an Oscar.
Sweet little pug face.
Absolutely superb. Now this is what...
He was nominated for an Oscar for this?
He was nominated for an Oscar for this. He's for brilliant. Best supporting
he
actor.
He is really good, but I'm surprised that they...
It's not the sort of film that usually gets...
No, not at all.
Foster in Hell or High Water needs to get his notepad out as far as I'm concerned. This is how you show an unpredictable, scatty, frenetic... This is a person who could turn around at any minute and could absolutely... He could bite your ear off. If he wanted to. And then obviously you've got Affleck, who's the level head. He's the anti-hero. You're all through his gaze. And then a very small role as well from Pete Postlethwaite is also, which I think he was posthumously nominated for a BAFTA, according to Wikipedia. Not that I think he necessarily deserved it for this, but...
I mean, he was in it for 5 minutes, wasn't he?
2 seconds, but he adds a little edge. And then, yeah, Rebecca Hall.
Which made me think that he was the main antagonist for the film, and he takes a massive backseat.
Yeah,
I didn't even realise he was the bad guy until.
Do you think they focused?
The
Do you think they did more and maybe they went?
Yeah, honestly, don't know.
Think, isn't it?
And then
left?
Cut all the good heisty bits and focus more on Rebecca Hall, whose character arc is just the most ridiculous thing ever.
What do you mean?
Her decisions in the final 10 minutes are absolutely ludicrous. She flip flops all over the place.
That's the heart. He treats her so well, and then he...
No, he doesn't treat her well.
He does.
What has he done to treat her well? Lie to her?
Okay, so you take that aside. He treats her like a princess, and then obviously, he like a man, obviously, all things is too much of a spoiler. Things come to a head, and then he's got to make a decision, and he acts in the mature way, sort of sets the story straight, and then she's got a decision to make whether she thinks there's enough goodness in this character, which is what you as an audience are kind of doing the whole way, which we've mentioned earlier with a lot of these characters. You're always going, they're committing crimes, but he's another one who's like in sort of Hell or High Water, that initially they set out not to hurt anyone.
But what is their reasoning in this? In the town,
but, well,
why
from what
we
believe,
with them?
Postlethwaite has a certain the first one seems like it is just for the money because it's their job, it's what they do, it's what people from Boston do, it's the culture there.
Right.
It's what your parents do, it's what his father did, and then as it goes on, obviously we sort of realise that Postlethwaite, like you said, isn't necessarily shown enough, but he is running this racket and he has a certain number of expectations. He puts them together and he then has them in his back pocket to go, well, you'll do this because I said so, because I've got too much on you, you'd be stupid not to.
I think out of the majority of heist films, I kind of sided with this team the least. I just, especially when Affleck says I could have had a life as a professional ice hockey player.
And then he...
And you kind of think, well, you should have.
Well, no, but he explained, because again, you can take the man out of Boston, but you can't take the Boston out of the man. He said he completely... There was like one injury and then he moved home and then he fell back into with all his old mates and again, I think, got into drugs and got into... And that is this world that in his first two films, he does paint this sort of idea of Boston as this just crime city that you can't escape as much as you want to get out of your system and move away. You can't.
I think that's
and that's
where
lovely. That's so haunting.
That does sound amazing. When you explain it to me like that, it sounds brilliant.
But it didn't come across.
But the film didn't come across to me like that.
But there are a few scenes where he talks about, oh, what might have been, I could have been a somebody. You know, he has that scene.
Oh, too but, busy sticking his tongue down Rebecca Hall's throat.
Yeah, because...
course in a magazine for
that. But then he realises that there is something. Boston has given him all of this nonsense, all of these terrible people around him. But then he goes, actually, you know what? there can also be something, I mean, sure, she's not actually from Boston, but there's something worth sticking around for. And then before you know it, it comes back, Boston gets him again, and then he has to make a decision. And then that final, the big heist is, it's drawn out because as you'd expect in the final set piece of the film, things do go wrong. Mm. And yeah, it just has a bit of everything for me.
Yeah, for me, the high scenes are the best thing about this film by a country mile. The characters are just a joke, really. I mean, I think Jeremy Renner's performance is very good, but you look at that team in general, they're
critically... He's still a stock character.
Yeah. And, you know, the two other people in their team, you know, they hardly even have a speaking line. Chris Cooper is in it for one scene as playing Ben Affleck's dad. I think it's one scene anyway, and then that's about it. Blake Lively pretty much has a pivotal or something that directly and very seriously impacts the storyline, but she is on screen for probably 45 seconds maybe throughout the whole film. Completely.
She's got a couple scenes at the start, and then she has a couple towards the end.
Yeah.
Then. But nothing substantial, sure.
Yeah, and one of those scenes at the end as well, again. That of a cop who comes in and drags out the scene for 10 minutes when he could have just come in and arrested her.
Well, you say that though, because that's that's the biggest flaw of this film for me. Everything happens frustratingly quickly. So you've got the crime scene at the beginning is a joke. It annoys me how some films like this do it, where everything happens unrealistically quickly. So you've got the crime scene, you've got the interview that they have with her, you've got John Hamm's briefing of the police force as well when they're looking out for these guys. Ben Affleck's courting of her as well is ridiculous. The case in general, everything happens ridiculously quickly. The epitome of that for me is him working out. I mean, there's that scene where you have to have him working out. You go, God, this guy's tough. Have you seen those abs? Have you seen how many chin-ups he can do? This guy's tough. Instead of, like Jeremy Renner, you build up this aura about him. You know, there's this respect and there's this authority that he has, that he can embody, that Ben Affleck just cannot do. But even however big he is in this film, he's just such a terrible actor that you can never believe that he is a tough guy.
He's soulless.
And this is the issue for me. The film took so many shortcuts to try and, again, sort of style of a substance, where it doesn't take the time to try and bring some authenticity to this. It just skips through things very, very quickly, short, sharp scenes to try and almost just get you out of that sort of the exposition of the first half an hour into what this true storyline is going to be. And for me, at that point, I was then looking upon everything else unfavourably other than the high scenes.
It's that pacing, which is I don't want to watch a film like this that is I mean, whether it was intentional or not, sure, that embraces these cliches. It wants to show all of, oh, we've got to show this. And I quite like that it rushes through that, because I wasn't bored. The reason why I found this film so entertaining and delivered exactly what I wanted from a trailer or poster is because of that. It's just going through, it's just doing it well, it's just taking these characters on the arc that I could have written from the beginning without knowing anything. And that's good. I think if they'd done it any other way with the key sort of plot points that were already in there, you would have been like, oh, now he's taking it too serious. This is trying to go for substance over style and it just doesn't work. But I think I like it for that. And I don't think he's, like in Gongo, he's perfectly cast because he is such a gormless idiot. But I think he's fine. I think he's a bit rough. He's a bit of a, you know, he's been through things. He's been around, but he's also clearly, from his look, that much more refined and that much more intelligent. That much more. He actually has more thoughtful than obviously his other team, and particularly obviously Renner. But I don't mind that. It was very synthetic, but for this kind of thing, for action films, which is what pretty much this is, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is an action film, and for me, the action parts of it are very, very good. It's the character stuff. I suppose it's what makes Heat so good is that you've got those two. You've got more main characters, but those
two. It's a freak
two,
of nature. It's just how it manages. I mean, sure, that film is what, 2.5?
Yeah.
This isn't 2.5 hours, but that film is. And that has just got Pacino and De Niro just before they went bad. So,
but I think as well for this film, and maybe I'm being a bit hypocritical here and wanting a cliche, but for me, John Hamm in this is clearly in this because Mad Men was at its height at this point. So they're like, right, how do we cash in on him? How do we cash in on the TV audience? And they go, oh, I like Mad Men. Oh, I'll watch this film then. So they clearly try and do that. Whereas for me,
shoehorned in.
Yeah, for me, his character
he's good.
Well, he's all right, but his character for me is there's the character beneath him, played by Titus Welliver, who is clearly an old like Southie guy, or he's clearly from Boston. And there's that one scene where he says, you know. Sorry, where Ben Affleck goes from and says, you know what people call people who, you know, they used to hang around with all their mates and they go and join the police and sort of snitch on all of them. And from there you go, oh, so Titus Weller, he was one of them, and now he's gone over to the police. And I thought that would have been so much of a better lead if he had played John Hamm's character, and him with all his background, with all his baggage about being from Boston and from hanging out with Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner when they're younger, things like that. I thought that would have been so much more interesting to see, rather than John Hamm, who has, I don't really quite understand. He's not quite this renegade, a bit like, you know, Liev Schreiber's character in Spotlight. The whole point of why he's so good is because he's not from Boston. And he comes in externally, comes into Boston and goes, right, I'm going to shake this up. And you could argue that they didn't find out what they did, because they found out what they did because he was able to be completely emotionally detached from Boston.
Different statement, yeah.
Yeah, in. Whereas John Hamm, you didn't get that. You didn't. He was sort of a halfway house. He didn't seem to come in as this complete renegade and maverick shaking things up. But then he wasn't sort of tied to Boston, so he just sort of fell between two stools there. Whereas Titus Weatherby's character, I thought they could have really beefed that up and said, right, he's the main guy. They've got history. They've got.
But I don't know if I like that, because it didn't play on that. I quite like that it was just a straight up. He's just a cop. I just want to see, sometimes I don't want to see someone being a renegade going above their station because they're a badass, or being just such a, yeah, because they love the place. I just like to see a man do his job. He just did it. Just did what I would have expected him to do outside of film land. He just got about his business and just was competent. You've got all the nutters on the street for all the sort of like, whoa, these characters that you go to see the cinema to see, these people that you'll never meet. And I think he anchored it, and it was fine.
And for me, I agree with Robert. You know, the love story element to this, I did feel slightly uncomfortable about that towards the end. The resolution at the end was all a bit too nicey. I mean, there's a couple for me. There's a bit, I think it's right towards the end. You know, he says, given what you've done, everyone should always be punished for their actions, or something like that. And I thought he has hardly been punished for his actions whatsoever, considering what he's done. And I agree. I think you've already touched on it, but Pete, possibly it was a bit weird because you can't help but feel there was more there.
Yeah, I mean, because he did die after it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't read up. I don't know if he had more. He did more. Maybe there was more in the scripts and they weren't able to do.
But. Speaking of the script, he had a what I thought was a terrible line, but other people might consider it to be terrific. He says, I'm still in the ring, I'm still taking punches, I'm still ahead on points, which for me are three statements that mean exactly the same thing, but he just used them in a row as if to really hammer home some sort of boxing analogy.
Don't get me started on the writing in the film. When Rebecca Hall and Ben Affleck are in the van, and Rebecca Hall looks at him, and I'll never forget that voice. And
well, you did.
Yeah, and Ben Affleck just kind of goes, wow.
It'd be so funny if you suddenly like talked in a high-pitched voice or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, because would you look, you're there, you've just been kidnapped. You're not, it's just something that you say, but like irrealistically, it would be so difficult.
Then Affleck's follow-up line to be like, well, it might be harder than you think.
Yeah, it's great. And that annoys
me.
So cheesy.
That annoys
me. But that's what this is.
That's
this
not
isn't
great.
This isn't trying to be I think it is just trying to be way more fun. I think he's been told, right, because this made like 135 million off 2025. Like, I think they went, right, if you really up it for this one, we'll let you do what you want for your next one. But final thoughts, what would you give it overall, James?
I would give it 3 stars, because as I say, it definitely has some flaws, particularly from a character point of view. But the action scenes are brilliant. And when I think about Gone Baby Gone, I would say this is nowhere near Gone Baby Gone. I really thought Gone Baby Gone was special. This is mediocre, good and bad. So 3.
Robbie,
I'm gonna go 1 again.
There's no. This is getting ridiculous.
It's got no style. It's got no substance, and it's got absolutely nothing redeeming about it apart from Jeremy Renner, who gets my 1 star.
Oh wow! I'm going to give this a 4 stars. It's not as good as Gone Baby Gone, but there was more to like, and I think this film did a lot less wrong than Hell or High Water. I was engrossed for 2 hours, and I lapped it up.
2 hours,
lapped it up.
Never get that back. Right, what film am I rating 1 star next?
Onto the classic, which was James's choice.
That was Dog Day Afternoon, which is the 1975 film set in 1972, which tells the true story of an attempted bank robbery of the unprepared, clumsy, ill-disciplined, and deluded Al Pacino's character, and you get that all within pretty much the first 5-10 minutes, really.
Yeah, I mean, the opening scene is really really weird. They pull up outside of a bank, which you don't really know what's going on, and they're talking amongst themselves, and you don't hear the dialogue. You genuinely...
It starts off with three, and then it quickly goes down to two.
There's a lot of haphazardness in the opening 5 to 10.
I mean, that unwrapping of the gun. I mean, I had to watch rewatch that four times. That says it all. That for me is straight from the off. This film is this film is really, really wonderful. I mean, that opening sets the tone. It's just the way this man, this situation, this whole part of the world at this moment in time is just so confused and they don't know what they're doing. But it's so fantastic.
It's so true, because I didn't know anything about this film. I mistakenly thought it was about a dog or something. Not when I picked it, I would add.
Beethoven the Four. Yeah.
Beethoven robs the bank with Lassie.
But, you know, I had no idea what this film was about until, you know, we were looking at heist films and that came up. But I didn't know any of the history behind it. So when at first he storms into the bank, I assumed it was one of many heists, or I suppose similar to the other heist films we talked about and some of the other ones we've referenced, that this was just going to be one heist of many that he goes through, and there's some more emotional journey. Whereas actually I liked the idea that it's just this one heist, and it you know, chronicles what goes on, you know, not quite in real time, but there or thereabouts, in terms of where it goes. And for me, we've talked about how farcical it is, or how farcical the attempt is, and that's really hammered home. And you've already touched upon him getting the gun out, but then there's also, like, one of them needs the toilet, one of them has asthma, one of them's husband's calls and says, when's it going to be over, I'm cooking dinner, and then you've got that third guy who leaves, and then to cap it all off, he pays the pizza guy, he tips the pizza guy with the money he's just stolen from the bank. You just think, this is just comical. Like, unless it was a true, you know, it's a true story, but if it hadn't been a true story, you wouldn't have believed what was going on. Really, no one takes him seriously. No one takes the situation seriously. The media are going crazy. But the police aren't really.
He doesn't take the situation seriously.
But then also, there's, and I love this character, there's the really respectable banker, who I think the manager, bank manager in there, who's just so casual the whole time. He's just really controlled, really rational. You know, really takes it very slowly and just says, you know, yeah, everything's fine, and speaks to him on his level. And I liked that when everyone else, no one's taking it seriously, he's just very calm and very composed in what can be a very, you know, emotionally, you know, triggering situation. But I think for me, this film is all about control and those who are in control and those who are out of control. Now, Pacino, in pretty much every single aspect of this film, is out of control. And I think what I loved about this film is they gave him the illusion of control, which in itself is control.
The moment, there's obviously one bit where he swaps around the drivers to the airport.
Yeah, and that's great, yeah.
But far earlier than that, he goes outside and he sees the crowd chanting his name, or he just sort of, they're all sweating profusely the whole way through. He goes outside, just gets a bit of air, and he looks around and he realises, he's like, yeah, I've got this. And you can see the twinkle in his eye, thinking, he might actually do it. He's got the power. They're gonna get a jumbo jet into inner city, sort of Brooklyn, and make it all magic. But he obviously doesn't have control. And then does Cazale have control? You know, he's reserved. He's got the gun.
Yeah.
And then whenever they speak to him, there's that great set to between him and one of the lead tellers about smoking. And he's like, you shouldn't smoke. You know?
Yeah.
And she's like, are you having a laugh? I mean, you're robbing a bank. I mean, this is ludicrous. And he's obviously, I'm not saying that Al Pacino's character is bright, but Cazale's character is clearly not bright. He's asked what country he wants to go to, and he says Wyoming.
Yeah, but he's an interesting character.
Because is he in control all along?
He's just brooding. He's just almost waiting to erupt. You've got that history, as you've said, you know, of the Vietnam vets, which I didn't think they exploit as much as they could have done.
Because
they touch upon it a couple of times, which I quite liked, but then you have other films
they're
that really
hammer
it home.
They're not shoving it into your face,
But with his character, you couldn't help but feel he obviously gave this idea that, you know what, he's not going back to jail again. He's not doing any more time.
No.
He's clearly done it in the past. He's not going back. He's willing to take action, willing to do something. But that's really it. You don't really get a lot out of him.
No,
which is
no, but you
maybe more is less is more in a way, because you are then left just a little bit uneasy about what this character could do. And at every point
the
in that
eyes,
film, I thought he's going to do something. Something is going to happen in this film where he's going to kick off.
Yeah, he does say at one point, I'm ready to kill these hostages.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And you
he
genuinely believe him.
The way he looks at you with those eyes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. He was Great little actor, wasn't he?
I mean, he's got the perfect record, 5 from 5. But yeah, I thought that his sort of dumb, sort of low, I've put here loaded contradiction in that, like, he could go off at any time, whereas Pacino was way more frenetic, again, scatty and all over the shop. But I always felt safe with him. I didn't ever think that he genuinely wanted to hurt anyone. And the contrast between those two, the really showy and the not, but not really knowing what each other really want in their heads. I just thought
the balance done well again.
It's a great balance. And again, as we've spoken about the others, but it's probably more important here than ever, the art of, do you care about them? And do you care about where they're going? And there was genuine sort of pathos towards the end where you're like, I think he's writing his will and testament. Oh,
yeah, for me, the way he enunciates and the way he, his diction on every single line there.
He's done it in his head.
Oh, it's so good. And yeah, as you say, you know, I didn't particularly like the character. You know, I didn't really sympathise him, but that line, it still hit me. That scene and him, yeah, exactly as you said there, his will, you know, just in case anything goes wrong. That did hit me quite hard. I thought that's a fantastic scene full of emotion and just full of absolute honesty and absolute sort of ultimatum, I suppose, for him, if he knows he's at the crossroads here, where it either goes well or it doesn't. Either way, and it's done quite well to dress it up previously, where he talks about his mum and references his mum. There's a great scene where I think his mum and his dad are watching him on TV, and the dad says, you know, why rob a bank when you've got a sucker for a mother? And you just thought, like, he had a mother there, he had his family there. And clearly he's quite, you know, a bit of a home bird as well. You know, he's a bit above his head, and he's gone in and done something thinking it'd be easy, and all of a sudden it's escalated. And at that point, you make a decision, you know, every second, every minute, and all of a sudden
you've got this storm outside. Yeah. But the key word here is vulnerability. The fact that the hostages are sort of just dancing around with each other, and the fact that even at the end, yeah, hostages are sort of like offering words of advice to certain characters.
They're playing with the guns at one point, aren't they?
They're just like having a little. They're just practicing. That's it. Doing like the military kind
routines,
of like
yeah.
routines. But yeah, just the way they toyed with vulnerability and made you really care about the outcome. Whereas in the town, there were definitely two characters, at least in that main crew, you couldn't care less whether they live or died. One that you sort of thought deserved to die, and then one who you were a little unsure, depending on how much you liked Affleck's acting. But here, you really were invested in the outcome. And yeah, obviously, it is primarily set in one setting, and it does slightly move away towards the end without saying anything, but just that breathing space then, and it's just very melancholy, very sombre, and nearly draws a tear.
Unless I'm wrong, there was no music, there was no soundtrack to this film, no score.
Didn't notice any, yeah.
Certainly didn't pick up on it.
To the point where, you know, that particularly the scene with Pacino that we've already touched upon, for me, you're absolutely hanging on every single...
It's so much, it counts, it
doesn't need
you
it doesn't
so
need
more.
Any music to really try and hammer home and signpost what you're supposed to be feeling in this moment. The dialogue does everything for you.
Yeah, I think this is perfect, but does anyone not like anything about this?
For me, I thought it went on too long, personally, which is weird, because it's not a particularly long film. I mean, 2 hours is perfectly normal.
Yeah.
But for me, there are too many. I mean, you've already said it's all in one place, which means it's very difficult to keep going for such an extended period of time without there feeling like there's some lull periods. I think for me, there was a lot of scenes where he's talking to the bankers or they're waiting in the bank, and for me, there was one at least too many for me that I just thought you could have carried this on. You could have moved this story on by now. That didn't. Couple of scenes there where I thought that didn't add anything for me.
He goes out the bank, he comes back in, he goes on the phone, he goes back out, and then he comes back in, he goes back on the phone. There was a point about 40 minutes in where it did the same sort of repetitive cycle, and maybe it was trying to get the realism across, and maybe that is what hostage situations are like, but I need a bit more of the town's quick pace.
A bit more energy, a bit more of a variety.
Yeah. Especially during that period when you need something to kind of kick
you
back up.
I mean, as much as I think it was integral to building the story, when him and Leon are on the phone together, it's sort of that's when I did notice that it was sort of starting to drag, and it didn't quite have... what they're talking about is very poignant, but it didn't have the impact that him reading out, dictating his will. But yeah, how'd you feel about this overall?
For me, it's a 4. It's a strong 4. Because as our conversation has suggested, there are a lot of positives in this film. For me, it did just go on a bit too long, and there are a couple of things in there that I thought I can't quite give it, you know, the perfect 5. So for me, it's a strong 4.
I would absolutely agree. I mean, it feels strange. It's a different end of the scale of a 4 from the town. trying to do completely different things. But yeah, I think there it was just missing. Just it just needed to go up just an extra little bit. And I don't know how that could have managed that. And it did. There was definitely a lull, I think, about an hour and a half in. But yeah, it is a very strong four and certainly one of Lume's best.
It's a three. It's a strong three. It's
progress.
It's not good enough to be a four, just because I don't think at the end of it I enjoyed it enough to give it a four. But hey ho, on to next time.
And who's choosing next week, lads?
New release is me, James, and I've gone for Hunt for the Wilder People.
With the theme?
Of On the Run.
On the Run, ooh. Which means I've gone for The Bourne Identity.
It's
Jason Bourne.
And I've gone for John Carpenter's 80s classic, Starman. Starring Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen
in
what is essentially the original Midnight Special. So I watched it last night, and not the highest of hopes, but I've seen most of John Carpenter's classic films. It's one of the last ones, and it was, if you liked Midnight Special and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, if you like Close Encounters...
Is Close Encounters the one where they play the music?
Yeah. Right, I really better run it.